真っ白な景色に今誘われて僕は行くよまだ見ぬ世界へ。Hey everybody, welcome to your Thursday, December 13th Jumpcast, the only manga podcast to make Barbara Waldron's most fascinating podcast list in 2012. Joining me this week are Greg Jan and Emerson Pugh.
Gentlemen.
Hi guys.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, not too bad.
I'm going to have to be up all night writing a paper, but I'm doing this now.
It's a good thing you're wasting time with this thing.
Exactly. It is a perfectly worthwhile use of your time.
Yep.
This is my break.
So, Greg, you were telling me that you were reading a new manga that you want to talk about.
It's called Laughter in the End of the World. It's actually a joint project between two of the groups that do other series that we talk about, and it's not in Jump, so I don't know if it'll become a regular one or not. But I did mention it in passing last week because it had just started getting translated. It's by the artist who did Kakashi, I believe it's called, which was – I've heard of the series. I never read it or watched it, but it was – successful, so, you know, enough that I picked it up by osmosis. And I won't get into too much detail because it's just started, like, they're only on chapter 3 right now, but it's the premise of it seems to be kind of a post-apocalyptic thing where there was this demon that came out of the sea and destroyed the world, and it was covered in these markings, and then after it left, people all over the world started developing these markings, and they were labeled as demons and are basically immortal. Like, they can be killed, but they will come back to life, they will reformulate, and it's caused kind of this post-apocalyptic society where they're either shunned or running the show because they have to use force in order to not be constantly killed, and that sort of thing. And it's following a character that is traveling around and killing other ones because in this world there seems to be kind of a hunger that they're driven by, where they can, the only way to kill one of the immortals is to devour one of them, to absorb their symbol or something like that. And the implied premise is that it is the demon reconstituting itself, so then it will come and complete destroying the world or something like that. So it's dark, but not as dark as, you know, Berserk or Gantz when it was terribly dark and that sort of stuff. And it has a very Highlander-esque feel to it. But
your description reminded me of Gantz, just based on hearing that.
I was really picking up on the Berserker stuff.
Yeah.
It's a slow start. It's completely different from most of the new series that we discuss in Jump, where they're immediately trying to grasp onto people, probably because this is a successful author, so they get a little more leeway, and they're trying to kind of establish the world. So there's a bit of info dumping in the first two chapters, which are both quite long. The first one's 50-something pages, and the second one's in the 30s. But then the third chapter kind of got its hooks in me, and so I intend to continue reading this. And it might be something we might look into picking up. I'm pretty sure this is a weekly release. I'm not 100% certain.
What does it run in, if not Jump?
1 second. I'll see if I can find out.
It kind of sounds like a... more adult
slightly, but I don't know.
It looks like it's on that border between shonen and seinen.
Yeah,
the kind of thing that like Gantz or Berserk or to a lesser extent Death Note might fit into.
Yeah, like I could see it as being kind of on the same maturity level, if you will, as Death Note, except probably a little bit more gratuitous violence to a certain degree.
Oh boy!
Yeah, yay, violence! That's what that's why we go to comics, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. We can move on from this. I'll continue searching around and see if I can find what magazine it's printed in. But
there was another thing you wanted to talk about.
Sorry, it's in Weekly Shonen Sunday.
Yeah, this guy hell looks like Naruto. I just want to look up the art style.
He has a tattoo on his cheek. He doesn't have whiskers.
Clearly different. It even has the headband, I think. Yeah.
Looks it's a bandana, like... but yeah, it is a similar style, definitely. He looks older than Naruto, I'll say that, but yeah. But anyway.
He's time-skipped Naruto.
Something to look into if you're looking for something new to check out. There's not a whole lot of it to have to go through because only 3 chapters are out, and it does look like it'll be coming out weekly because it's published in Weekly Shonen Sunday.
Did the newest One Punch Man get translated yet?
No. The last one of those that I've seen was the like half chapter special thing.
Yeah, I remember something came out recently. I don't think it's been translated quite yet. So I'm sitting here on edge waiting for it.
Yeah, can't wait for the next one of those chapters. But there's also another new series that is also 3 chapters in, this one in Jump. We had mentioned it when they were being announced. And what is the title of that? Because it slipped out of my head because it's not in English. Shokugeki no Soma, which is the cooking one that we had talked about, which, yeah, it's pretty much Yakitake Japan, except with any type of cooking instead of focusing on bread.
Mm.
And from the comments after finishing reading it, I discovered that it's drawn by a successful porn artist. So there you go.
Is this
you
the
guys
way you
really
showed
needed
us
to know that?
I think you showed us pretty recently, like, the new cooking manga that had, like, a very prominent female character.
Yes, well, no, so they seem to have switched completely up who the perspective of the series is from. Now, we never got a fully translated version of the one-shot, but the one-shot seemed to be following a female who enjoyed tasting food and then later went to a cooking competition, and the male character was one of the competitors in it. In the actual series, you're following the male who is the son of a famous cook. Well, not necessarily famous, but a very successful cook. And he's currently trying to get into a cooking academy where the aforementioned female ends up being kind of the tester to, you know, weed out people who obviously should not be going to this elite school. And it's kind of going in a, you know, low beginning, poor family, proletariat versus the rich people who have only got like successors to 5-star restaurant chef type people is almost the conflict that they're attempting to set up at this point. But yeah, it's all right. I'll probably keep an eye on it. I don't necessarily know if I care about it that much, but it's once more something to look into if that sounds like your thing.
I was actually reading it a bit before the started, and I'd say it has a decent hook. Like you mentioned, like the kind of
It has a flair. It has this kind of like, I don't know if I'm using this word right, but what comes to mind is the word panache about it. Just in its attitude with how it approaches the cooking.
And he has a very set goal. Like, and that's what like. I think a lot of manga kind of don't really set up that well.
They don't do that because they want to leave it open for when that goal is done.
Well, his goal is to be a better cook than his dad, which is a pretty ambiguous one, and there can be many, 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 many stages on the way.
Right, but it's very good that it's set that at the very beginning, so we want to see him succeed at that goal.
Yeah, it's sound it, maybe I'll look into it. We don't have a cooking manga on this podcast. Perhaps be
because that is such an enormous genre that we have to cover right there, right?
I mean, we had to introduce romance at some point.
Well, we didn't have to. We just kind of did.
The drawings that obviously kind of show...
You can tell where he's been.
Yeah, those are a bit distracting.
Well, and I didn't read Yakitake, but when we discussed the one-shot previously, apparently that's a common thing. In the first chapter, he is certainly equal opportunity, so ladies, by all means. But yeah.
All right, then.
Yep.
So on to Beelzebub?
Yes, which is the first of our regular series this week.
Yes. Which is a cute color page this week.
Yes, yeah. Merry Christmas.
With all the babies in the manga and Oga giving them cake.
Because cake is what you should feed to infants.
Clearly. I mean, it's fruit.
Those are cream giant cake. Slices.
I don't think that somebody Beals' age is supposed to be eating cake. Just gonna toss that out there.
Oh, do we actually see him, what he eats besides, I guess, he breastfeeds, I assume.
Yeah, the milk. We've seen that, like, that's the thing, is that he uses Beals' bottle.
Right? Well, the thing is, Oga is serving the cake, and we all know Oga is the best father.
Yes. He is an excellent father figure. That's why Beals chose him.
So this one starts off, same as the last couple, with the pairs facing off, which is the semifinal. So it's Kuneda and Izuma versus Paco and Kenzaki.
Yeah.
And they assume that there's no way it's going to be a head-on battle, so they'll just they have a decent chance.
Yes, and it further drives home that these two are going to become a couple at the end of this thing when they talk about how they would be able to win if it's a flirty battle, because obviously they would be more comfortable with it than the other couple.
Yes. That turns out to just be a head-on battle that ends the panel afterwards.
Yes. The mid panel in that page is just fantastic. It is the best flat stare.
Because we were wondering, like, we're thinking, oh, this is going to be the semifinals this week, and then the week after is going to be Oga and Aoi. But nope. Just finish it off in one page.
Yep. Just plow right through it.
Kuneda and Izuma win, and Izuma immediately drops out because there's no reason for him to be there anymore.
Because the entire thing just, you know, backfired.
And who was it that called that Aiba was going to show up?
I don't remember.
It was either you or Mike.
It was not me, so I'm going to go with Mike.
Okay. We shouldn't let him know that.
Because he'll never listen to this.
Meh.
Well, he's not on it, so why would he listen to it?
Exactly.
Good question.
So Aiba joins and takes Izuma's place. For some reason.
I love how petty.
Yeah, I just like how he shows up with, you know, the giant bouquet and.
Well, he came to confess on Christmas Eve. Or before Christmas, at least.
Yeah.
I like how Furuichi calls him the rom-com chief. Because that's essentially what he is.
Yeah, he knows all the tropes, right?
Yes. He is all the tropes.
But he is aware that he is all the tropes.
He's aware he doesn't care at all.
Yeah.
He just assumes that it works.
He's gotten buff.
Yeah.
So like but some guy with glasses brought me here.
Yeah. Oga does not understand why Kuneda is so intent on this. So they start, and it turns out to be another battle royale, except this time that has the addition
of stars.
Yeah. So whoever gets a star from the opposite corner first wins.
Well, whoever retaining their own.
Yeah.
You have to be in control of both.
So it's basically capture the flag, but with stars.
On a boxing ring.
Yes.
And they start working out a plan where somebody will stay back and defend while the other one attacks, and of course, everybody just attacks anyway.
Yep. Except Hilda, who's watching out and immediately has to dodge a punch from Kuneda, who has seemingly gotten a lot stronger since the last time they fought.
Shockwave.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while, but the only thing she really changed since then was she got that demon power and then lost it. Which, okay, so the part
that's confusing... Well, no, she never lost her demon power, did she?
She flushed him down the toilet.
Yeah, but I'm assuming he came back.
Well, he's not there now.
That we see.
Hmm.
Hilda does call out that Aiba, for some reason, has demon power still.
I'm just guessing he's going to show up, but...
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to pull the same trick twice. Not Aiba, the mangaka.
Oh, nah, maybe. I don't know.
It would be strange, but, I mean, Kuneda's there, so maybe. But yeah, she basically slams Hilda down.
Yeah, but basically, both her and Oga get one shot.
Yeah, Oga gets uppercutted right into the stomach and can't move, so Aiba waltzes over and steals their star.
That's a great panel.
Yeah. The announcer declares them are the Ibis team the winner, except Kenzaki points out that Beelzebub has already gotten the other star.
Because he's part of Oga and Hilda's couple, I suppose.
Yes. It counts.
Yes.
And I suppose it's going to come up next time if that demon fox dog thing is around, that he'll count as part of their team.
But nobody else would be able to see him. But
he can show himself, can't he?
No, I thought that he was only visible to people who were, like, I don't know, exposed to demon energy or whatever. Because they were able to see him, but Aiba wasn't before.
But that priestess girl could see him.
In tune or exposed to the spiritual world. I don't know. It's hand wave. I always assumed that it was like Bleach.
They'll hand wave it back if they need to.
Yeah.
Logic, it might be Elzebub.
I do it? Like how Aiba's little sister is like all over Beel as he has a star.
Maybe Aiba's little sister will be on their team.
So logically, next week is the conclusion.
Wait, I know what's going to happen.
Go for it.
Next week is Beel is still going to be holding on to his star. Aiba's sister is going to get the other star, and they, as a couple, are going to win.
I believe I've suggested that thing, except I thought it was Beel's and Kenzaki's niece.
She'll be off to the side and be all mad about it. But since we've established that Aiba's sister is here and, you know, at the ring and everything else, totally expecting that that's going to be what happens.
She'll be off to the side, and then Santa will show up, and then she'll strike.
Yes.
Kenzaki's niece joining the other team would be pretty funny, because she does hate Aiba's sister. And it would behoove her to take her down a peg.
All right, they've met.
Yeah. They fought over Beel.
And then Aoi's brother could show up and just make it a battle royale, right?
It would be pretty neat.
Yeah.
Kota. That was his name. I always forget that.
But yeah, I'm also disappointed that the school is not destroyed yet. I just want to toss that out there.
It'll happen next week.
Are you sure about that? I don't know.
I don't see it happening.
I see a Zebub blast in the future.
It's still incredibly plausible. I don't know. Just the way that this week went made me think that maybe he's not going to do that.
I feel like the first three or four pages of this issue were way better than everything afterwards. Like, decently cool battle, but that whole thing with, like, it being a battle royale was just hilarious.
Yeah, no, and, I mean, honestly, they were my favorite couple in this entire thing, I would say, just because of the hilarity of them.
That's so great about it.
Yeah.
The fact that this is a tournament that they could have won unless it goes to a fighting tournament, and that it suddenly does, is the best possible turn.
I agree.
And they wasted the fighting tournament on this fight instead of the next one. Which is still sort of a fighting tournament, but not completely.
Oh, they still would have lost that pretty handily, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thoughts for next week?
Well, I already tossed out my prediction, so
I don't think the school will blow up unless, like, Aiba really gets dangerous. Then sure.
I can see that. Aiba might have made a pact with a demon, is what you're saying.
I don't know what his deal is, but it just, like, depends on how powerful he really is. And so, like, if he's actually super crazy strong, then Oga's going to go full blast.
And then destroy the school in the process.
Yeah.
I can see it.
I'll allow it.
I still have a semi-theory that his little sister is actually a demon.
You think it's Beel's sister or something like that?
It doesn't have to be Beel's sister. Just a demon. I think it would be funny. And they didn't take full advantage of that in the vacation arc.
Well, he's back, and I'm sure he's going to transfer schools now, right?
We said that about Himikawa's girlfriend, too, and she didn't.
True, yeah.
I could see him staying.
I bet he, if he wins, I bet he wishes that he could stay.
But then he has to travel back off into the sunset so he can be the random guy who shows up occasionally.
Yes.
You can be a temporary transfer student.
Exchange program.
But yeah, anyway, good chapter. And honestly, I'm going to say, starting a trend with all of the chapters this week were pretty solid.
Yes. Actually. Which brings us to the next one.
Which is the surprise, right?
Yeah. This one was, this week's Bleach, actually really good.
Yeah, and it set up some stuff that can be interesting in the future, and
I did not sigh once.
Yeah, so let's move on to Bleach then. Yeah, no, just, so we find out who replaces the Captain Commander.
Kyoraku.
Yes.
Which is, well, Kenryusai's son.
Well, no, he,
well, his
he
adoptive
was,
son.
Yeah, he's one of the two that he referred to as his son. I don't think that they were actually related by blood.
Yeah, but he raised him, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a white beard thing.
So he, you know, translates, or he transfers to the first squad and all that sort of stuff. Then we cut back up to Ichigo, and
so this is the weak part of the chapter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Just, oh, Ichigo is so strong. Let's explain why in several pages.
Well, I thought the arguing and fighting over him not being able to hold his breath as long as he should was kind of amusing.
Yeah, but then the whole, like, oh, he reflected the punches. Like, we know Ichigo's strong. We know he's special for no apparent reason. Because he's half everything.
And he wasn't really that hurt to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Renji standing up and being able to take the punch, or it wasn't a punch for him, was it? Or, yeah, no. Yeah, it was a punch. So.
Yeah.
Him being able to take the punch, that was kind of badass.
But now, he kind of, like, that's the part that confused me. When he got punched, he saw, or the Shinigami saw his arm shake. So I'm guessing he knows he's not fine, but let him go anyway? Or is he surprised that Renji could take the punch, period?
I think it was just showing the shock, or I don't know. Either way,
he's not
I think
completely healed, but he's enough.
I think that at this point, you know, with the Bankai and whatnot, it makes no sense that he wasn't raised to captain at some point during when they had the vacancies. I think that they're showing that. I don't know. And then we see that the guys who were holding Ichigo down were, you know, terribly bruised during that time.
Because they could take the hot spring.
Yeah.
Because something Ryatsu.
Yes, something. And one of the translations through here, the first one that I read, which is not one of the better ones, but the last panel with these guys, I'm trying to pull it up again. Yeah, it's like, I can see why the King of Souls would fall for him, which is a weird... I don't know if that's what's supposed to be implied there or not.
Yeah,
it seems like
that.
Why the king really likes Ichigo or is really interested in him.
That's that's how I took it, but would fall for him would be...
That would be a good twist.
That would be really...
He's in love with Ichigo.
Yeah, it turns out the god is gay, right?
Why not?
And then Orihime has to fight for his affections.
I think it just has to do more with, like, this guy's way of talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a delinquent, so he'll say inappropriate things.
But the main thrust of it is that the King of Souls brought Ichigo up there because he's interested in Ichigo.
Yes.
In some way. Probably not romantically.
Because Ichigo will, you know... be a major factor in whatever is going to be coming up because he is the protagonist.
Because he's half Soul King.
Yeah.
No, he'll finally meet the Soul King, and the Soul King will be, "Hey, Ichigo, I saw you in the hot spring."
You sure could hold your breath for a long time.
So anyway, we cut back to the new Captain Commander addressing his men. Or addressing the Gotei 44, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah.
46?
Something like that.
40-something. He's addressing the politicians.
Yeah.
and, you know, is talking about leaving and going somewhere and arranging who's going to be taking care of what in the meantime.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah, sorry, 46, you're right.
Okay. Hot bureaucratic action.
And he states his major plan, which honestly kind of makes me excited for future Bleach.
Yes.
Assuming they don't drop this immediately.
Yeah. To teach Kenpachi the art of killing.
Yay!
Which I assume means that he wants Kenpachi to understand how to use his power.
Yeah. And then it gets into the entire, you know, thing that was, that you missed during the Hueco and Mundo arc, which was the funniest thing ever, which was his insane power-up during that was he made himself stronger by swinging his swords with both hands.
I think I remember people telling me about that. Yes. And I remember it sounding really stupid.
It was stupid, great, but it was funny. But, like, it had a flashback to, you know, or not a flashback, but it had, you know, him talking about how Genryusai had taught him proper Kenpo technique, like, and he gets into the proper stance with both hands on the sword and all that sort of stuff. And so it refers back to that here, where he taught him one day and then stopped because he was concerned. And then we get to the twist.
Which is that Kenpachi, the first Kenpachi, which is the title given to the strongest Shinigami, was Unohana.
Who has been hinted at all this time as being terrifying, but who we've never seen fight.
Did we know that Kenpachi was just a title?
Yes.
Well, okay. This is a retcon right here, because hypothetically, the strongest sword fighter was always the title Kenpachi, and that person was traditionally the captain of the 11th squad. And the current Kenpachi got the title and the captainship by killing the previous one. So maybe there's something where, like, she decided that she could no longer fight and so would start healing and switch to a different, switch to the healing squad or something like that, which would be a way to tie it all together. But hypothetically, we know that the current Kenpachi got his title by killing the previous one.
The thing that raised my eyebrow is there a reason that her name is Yachiru? Like, a story reason. Because that seems a little too coincidental.
I don't know.
Is it just me?
I honestly didn't make that connection. I'm still in the camp that his sword is Yachiru. I'm still in that camp. But
I mean, for Kubotite knows not to reuse names.
Yeah.
Especially as something so blatantly that if he planned this out from the beginning, they're going to have to cross paths at some point. It seems to me that there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's not, and Kubotite is just, you know, being lazy.
No, I think this is one of his last good ideas.
Honestly, I do like the end of this. This whole, let's use Kenpachi as a weapon and let's actually train him to be better. I can see it totally backfiring and then him riding the ship suddenly.
Yeah, and like the weird thing about calling her Yachiru is that apparently her like full name had been revealed previously and it was Retsu. So.
Okay, that's very strange then.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to be left wondering what relationship Unohana has to Yachiru. Who we haven't seen in, like, was she in Hueco Mundo?
Yes.
She was talking while Ken was fighting.
So we haven't seen her since Hueco Mundo, at least. We haven't seen her do anything since Soul Society.
Have we ever seen her do anything, period?
I thought she...
No,
I swear she did something. The
most that she's done was always surprise everybody because she was able to move around incredibly fast, like faster than anybody could follow, and nobody could sense her.
Oh, and everyone was always surprised that she could be around Kenpachi because the whole everyone gets
pressure.
Sick around him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, now the Yachiru thing is going to bother me. Unless
she's
like
going back and checking the other translation to see if that's the same name that they use.
It would be weird if it wasn't. Like, unless he's using very obscure kanji that somehow work out differently, it seems like that would be pretty on the nose.
What if he just forgot what her first name was?
No, they say Yachiru here as well, so.
Yeah. So there's got to be a reason for that.
So yeah, what was that discussion about? Yeah, Bleach totally winding down. They won't introduce anything new, right?
I'm not saying they wouldn't. I'm saying they shouldn't.
But hey, it's the best thing that's happened to Bleach in a long time, so.
Well, yeah. Yeah. As long as he doesn't go too far from this.
Oh, well, I'm assuming they're not going to be showing this. I think that it's just kind of, this is something that's going to be happening in the background while we go back to Ichigo.
Right. If this becomes a background element, though, and they just kind of bring it up, like, 6 months from now, Kenpachi's in a fight, and that's the one fight, and that's it, then that's going to be, that's classic Kubota day, but
yeah, no, that is totally what I'm expecting to happen, and I think that he is going to have his release, and that'll be the main thing that we see.
I just wanted Ichigo to switch to Kenpachi now.
Kenpachi Adventures.
That's the interesting story.
I would read it.
Yeah. Ichigo's going to turn out to be half Kenpachi. Alright, but thoughts, predictions for next week?
I think it's going to be going back to Ichigo for pretty much the entire thing. We'll see what happens on the next island.
Where's he going again?
He's flying off to the next island. That's, yeah.
That's it? Just no explanation beyond that?
I think that they mention whose it is, but, he has to go through all of them before getting to the Soul King, I believe.
That's stupid.
Train arc.
I think it's just a way to character build the,
But they shouldn't be character building at this point, honestly. These characters should not exist.
Oh, they're fine.
They're
okay,
not.
What would the ending of this issue be as interesting if it were just some random guy he introduced? Instead of Unohana.
Well, of course not.
Yeah, he should be working on the characters he has, not, you know, introducing
more. But the
problem
is, which one of them would you put into these current roles?
The current role? Why does there need to be a squad of Soul King guardians that just show up at in the final arc?
Well, no. But the point I'm trying to say is, so we've already, he's written himself kind of into a corner with what the current existing characters are hypothetically capable of.
It's
so who else would Ichigo learn from or whatever he has to do to get good enough to beat everybody?
They could have. Well, okay, there's Aizen. But would you really have batted an eye if Kurotsuchi could have fixed the Bankai, or if Unohana could have healed them?
Unohana healing them, yes or no, but I don't know. The fixing the Bankai thing, that would be like, okay, and then it's fixed and is the same, and that helps us not at all.
Yoruichi comes and she helps him make a new Bankai. Done.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
And where the hell is Yoruichi? Who knows?
Probably Hueco-Mundo. Even though she didn't go with them when they originally went.
Where Urahara, Orihime, and Chad, and Grimjaw are just hanging out.
Yep.
Which kind of proves my point. He has characters that are languishing for no reason, that are doing things in plot-important areas
that are probably more interesting than what we're actually watching.
Yeah, instead
we're
watching this guy prove how strong Ichigo is. Which, we've seen that 100 times, and we'll see it 100 times more before the manga's over.
Yeah, pretty much.
That said, I did like this particular one.
That being said, this was an excellent chapter for Bleach.
I honestly just hope it follows Kenpachi for at least half a chapter.
You know, we always get that Bleach's appointment, right? When Kenpachi does something cool or they talk about Kenpachi, and then the next week it's shit.
Yeah.
It's that Bleach crescendo that roller coasters down.
Stop reminding us.
All right, then. On to Assassination Classroom. We've got two chapters to cover this week.
Two chapters.
And last week,
double the fun.
Last week's was the end of, or the resolution of the
artificial intelligence.
Arc. Yeah. Like, give her a nickname at some point, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
Ritsu.
Ritsu.
Yeah.
So she's a hit with the class because she's a demure, intelligent girl.
Incredibly emotional.
Yes. And Kuro-sensei is worried because they have the same personality type.
Which everyone says no.
He's all jealous because he used to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
We miss
the
best
running gag of, you know, Terasaka made a 2D girl cry, and then the 2D is just fine. Real women don't need more dimensions than that.
He's a creepy otaku.
Yes.
Do you seriously want your first line in the manga to be like that?
Yeah, break the fourth wall.
I did like the part where Sugaya didn't know the answer to the question Kuro-sensei was asking him, and Ritsu helped him cheat with a like really sort of creepy skirt lift.
Yeah. On the side of her leg.
Yeah. So at some point she's a hit and everyone loves her, but her creators realize that there's so many unnecessary things in her now that they just want to break her down to assassinations.
Well, it's not that there's unnecessary things, it's just that they want her to focus on assassinating because they want that money, damn it.
Well, they specifically use the word unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's just assassinations only. So they take all that stuff out, all the big 2D display, all that's gone, and they tell Kuro-sensei that this sort of alteration is also considered doing harm. And none of the other students can mess with her either.
Well, the line is, from now on, making enhancement is also, like, forbidden.
Yeah.
Which is a very loaded line, because he's a teacher.
Well, they don't want him to be the teacher in the first place.
True.
They just want him to kill him. But yeah, she leaves in the part of her personality that keeps her from disrupting everybody else. Because she finds the idea of cooperation to be essential to assassination.
Yes, and so she hid that away in something which would not be removed.
So she showers flowers on everybody.
Daw.
And then she kind of gets like, I guess she sort of keeps the display thing because she's smiling at the end.
Well, it looks like they did the weird mouth thing again, so either she was playing a joke at them or whatnot, but it's a smaller LCD screen instead of the
full body.
The full body.
Like, she still has the body personality expressive thing.
Yes.
She's playing Jenga with people. Then the final panel, which is...
Yes. Is it true that drawing on a face makes you popular?
As Irina squeezes her breasts together and shows a face.
Yes. Because obviously, if she was going to draw a face somewhere, that's where she would draw it.
Of course.
You gotta get that fan service in. I guess that's fan service? Maybe?
It's something, all right.
The skirt hike was more fan service.
Yeah. But yeah, it was an entertaining chapter. It was a good resolution to this robot girl arc.
Yeah.
Now, like, as I said, I kind of, like, I thought a lot about this chapter. Like, it's very... I think it's an example of what makes Assassination Classroom such an interesting manga. Because you have... Oh, what was I going to say?
Notes aren't helping you now.
You
huh?
just you distracted me, Dragon.
I'm Greg. Sorry. What can I say?
One, you have like kind of this horrifying dark reality because you have Ritsu's creators essentially gutting her,
right?
Of like everything that made her a personality and someone who is actually happy with themselves, and so. And that contrasts, obviously, with the end of the chapter where it's like, oh, everyone's happy and fine. She's okay. Thank God. But I saw this chapter as kind of necessary for Ritsu as a character to be fully integrated into the class. Because, like, the chapter is about like the removal of her personality and something, and like all these characters in Class E, they're kind of like trodden upon, even though a lot of them are really likable.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone in this class, for the most part, is an enjoyable person, and like I think we all like the characters, even if they don't have.
Some of them are a little bland, but they're all likable people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but like they're constantly like crapped on for just being this like lower person that isn't completely efficient. They don't have the best grades, and that's all that matters.
Well, I think this is one of those issues that's like we've talked about this before with the Assassination Classroom, kind of talking about how Japanese education works.
Mm-hmm.
That people are kind of like thrown down, and you try to get the best out of everyone you can, but if you can't, you just try to get the best out of 99%. And this one, it's like the parents are, they're not even subtle about this one. The parents are actively stripping out the parts of her that don't commit to their goals.
Exactly.
Which is, I mean, the mangaka kind of has a chip on his shoulder, but he's doing decent stories with it.
And I think that's what makes Ritsu, like, a complete, now, student.
She's yeah.
fully accepted because she is exactly like everyone else now.
And she's playing Jenga with him.
Yeah.
For some reason.
That's what she really needed to do to be accepted with everybody, is having to play Jenga.
That's what you do with friends. You never play Jenga with strangers.
Well, she gave them lollipops and ice cream, so clearly friends.
So she is the rich friend of the delinquents that, you know, buys everybody's affection, right?
Well, that tech probably not cheap. So yes.
But yeah, so that was a very satisfying mini arc, and I am glad that my prediction was wrong.
What was your prediction?
That they would make an android body for her. They would further in that direction.
I think that would be too rote for Assassination Classroom.
I think it would just be not funny.
I think it could be done well. I just don't think it would fit the mood.
Right.
Then again, to be fair, a giant monolith doesn't really fit the mood either. But
I think it's funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of mood changes...
that was not intentional in the slightest.
The next issue of Assassination Classroom where... That was Sugaya-kun in the previous one, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so this one's about him.
Yeah, well, first off, just a quick note, just because we have to keep this stuff in mind since we have a year, they established that we're 1/4 of the way through the time limit at this point.
Right. It's June now.
Yeah.
For them.
9 months left.
So the Nagisa, Girl Nagisa, baseball guy, and someone else are walking along, and they see Tsugaya with a girlfriend named Mehara? Or is that somebody else?
Skipped all the sight gags in the early part of the chapter, where Koro-sensei's head absorbs all the humidity in the air and expands.
And their classroom is poorly insulated.
Yes. It's. I think that was just to draw the attention to the difference between the regular classroom and this place, again, as we're shifting back into that conflict.
Also, when his head gets too much humidity, he starts growing hair, which is just a mushroom, which he then eats. So my theory now is that Koro-sensei is a toad.
A toad with tentacles?
Yes. But yeah, okay. they do see Sugaya with a girl named Tsuchiya Kaho from Class C. And then alongside, or as they follow both of them, they run into her other boyfriend. And, I mean, I'm trying to figure out like the best way to describe this without being like going through beat by beat. But basically, she goes, "Oh, you Class E. I was never with that guy. He didn't realize that I broke up with him." She turns into a kind of a huge bitch.
Kind of.
Yes. The thing that gets me about this one is that she has really 70s manga character design. Like
I guess a little bit. I don't know. It doesn't look that much different from everybody else's style in this series.
I think her and the other guy do.
Do you mean like the transition when she's changing face?
That and like a couple of panels, she looks like she's straight out of a Tezuka manga. To me, at least.
I don't know. It doesn't seem out of place, I would say.
Yeah,
I don't think it's out of place. I think it's just, it's an interesting, it seems intentional to me. But yeah, they start kicking Sugiyama.
Yeah.
And the chairman apparently is just sort of there.
Well, they're right by the school, so one would assume.
Well, it looks like he was just sitting in his car, staring at nothing.
Maybe he was.
He's trolling for some kids. He's driving around.
He came and he gives Sugiya a tissue.
Yeah, to you know, stuff to dry himself off with.
Yes.
And then, you know, says, oh, it's a good thing. You were very close to getting kicked out for fighting, even though he didn't, you know, attack the other guy at all.
So he saves Sugiya, but manages to do it while being creepy and maintaining the social order.
It's really interesting.
Which underscores him as a really excellent antagonist for this series.
He's basically the anti-Karo Sensei.
Yeah.
He doesn't really care about their education at all. Or their self-worth.
It's even worse because he wants to make sure that no one from Class E drops out of school. Because he wants them all there for the rest of the school.
Yeah.
Yeah, to fear.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping down to.
So
and
the
then
rest...
they have probably the page of the manga that I have seen the word bitch on most. Like,
yeah.
They talk about how the girlfriend's a bitch.
Yeah.
And then they start talking about Irina Sensei, who's also a bitch, a pro bitch.
Yeah, but so like she isn't as sophisticated a bitch.
Yes.
And he says, no, I don't care if she's a bitch.
Yeah, she's their bitch.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, well, there's nothing we can really do about this. We're in Class E. They knew that they can get away with all that stuff.
And then they talk about how, like, you know, the abruptness of her change, which was the one panel where she switched, what was kind of creepy.
Yes. Well, she's crazy, and also apparently, like, I guess Sugiya is a generally good guy. He's popular and cute and girls like him, but since he's in Class E, nobody wants to be known, like, socializing with him.
Yeah.
So, like, her first reaction was, oh, I need to talk my way out of this. But then she immediately went, oh, I don't need to talk my way out of it. He's in Class E. It doesn't matter what
anybody thinks of him. Yeah.
Just throw him aside.
Yeah.
So, Koro Sensei shows up and says, instead of just dealing with it, why don't we get huge revenge?
Yeah.
He shows
and
up with a giant
I read that page, and it has the shot of all of them basically mimicking his face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be fun.
Even Nagisa, who's generally does nothing, is hyped up about revenge.
Well, Nagisa was shown to be like one of the most frightful students. Remember after the school assembly?
Oh, yeah, when he sort of laughed off the whole have you ever killed a guy thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which he hasn't either, so.
Yeah.
Kind of bragging a little bit.
He is a
but he was intimidating.
I actually kind of
kids his age.
I'm looking forward to the justice porn of Koro Sensei taking that girl down a peg.
Yeah, I am. But like my reaction to this chapter was literally, oh man, this is gonna be good.
Yeah, I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah,
front row center for this show.
The Koro Sensei is becoming a lot more protective of them now. Like, he's always been protective of them, but this is the first time he's willing to get revenge on their behalf.
Well, I don't necessarily know if it's going to be him getting revenge. I think he's going to help them craft their revenge.
I'm sure it's
going
to
involve
him.
He's not going to do it himself. He is going to teach them how to properly take revenge. without being noticed, because they're assassins, and assassins shouldn't be noticed.
Yes. They're slowly turning into ninjas.
And then he's going to take over Japan with his army of ninja students.
So, speaking of ninjas...
There we go.
Sure. Works for me.
On to Naruto, where everyone does everything.
Yes, everyone is attacking with their stuff.
Which is kind of cool. It's cool to see Guy and Rock Lee engaged in single attack.
Yeah, they're like, you know, breaking the fifth gate or whatever that was. And, yeah.
And they had previously in the last chapter encased the Jubi in concrete. So yeah. Clearly it was totally stopped and would never get up again. Until it completely busts out as if it were nothing.
Yeah, with a bunch of hands.
Yeah. It looks especially creepy now.
Yeah.
Because it looks like an emaciated Bulbasaur.
it kind of looks like a starved fox.
Yeah.
The end of each of its tails is a human hand.
And it has a human ear, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. out of one side, and then the mouth on the opposite side from the ear.
Yeah, the Jubi's fucked up, basically.
Yeah, it is demonic. It is the first one of these demons things that has truly looked demonic.
Yeah,
it's not in a good way.
Because the rest of them, they were all sages, friends, and pets. So they weren't evil per se. This thing looks evil.
Yes.
It starts shooting, I guess, ki blasts.
Yeah, the bijou bombs or whatever they're called.
The thing that takes the Kyuubi and the eight tails a bunch of time to actually produce.
Yeah, and it just, you know, starts developing them and making them and was, you know, shooting them out to try and hit places, but then they're just trying to disrupt it, like shaking the ground or something like that, trying to make it go off target, and then they can see the explosion, you know, over the horizon, because it's been fired so far.
Madara is kind of creepy.
So the thing I'm not understanding is Madara, are Madara and Obito, like, giving the Jubi Sharingan powers? Because they connect with the,
I assume that's just their method of control.
Okay.
Because this thing, I mean, it's the origin of the Tailed Beasts and that sort of stuff, and I don't remember exactly how it ties back into the Sage of the Six Paths, but the one eye looks like both a Sharingan and a Rinnegan, because it has the rings outside of what's normally the Sharingan.
Right. But should the Jubi itself have, like, is it a natural thing, or are they giving it to him?
I don't know. I'm just assuming that because this is kind of the unification of everything, that it just has them.
Yeah.
I think they're giving it to him.
It's hard to tell.
I think it doesn't really matter at the end.
Well, I mean, if it's a thing where they're getting all of their power from them, it's just a matter of separating.
Yeah, true. If they sever them from...
Well, I think that if they separate it, it'll just be that they lose control. I think that they won't be able to control the beast if they're severed from it.
I can see it killing them.
It goes nuts and just starts destroying everything.
So the city it destroys, is it that's the city that the leaders were staying in, right?
Well, no, they were moving them around, so we don't know.
Okay.
I think that the point is, it's some city really far from where they're at, and it's able to destroy those things with basically pinpoint accuracy.
Yeah. So they have nothing more to protect.
Yeah.
They recognize it's just a random city. They're not really hurt over it, but...
But anyway, it keeps flashing back and showing the sensing people way back in the thing who are directing all of the shinobi. And basically, it gets fired, and those guys are like, oh, so we're dead.
Yep.
There's no way to get out of the blast radius of this thing. It's coming. Yeah, everybody, we're just kind of dead.
Two named characters that I know of, at least.
Yeah.
Shikaku and Inochi, which are Shikamaru and Ino's fathers.
Yeah, and their last thing was to connect him to everybody on the battlefield and to relay whatever plan it was that they came up with.
Yeah. Then you see, you know, and Shikamaru crying while
there's smoke an explosion comes out. Way off in the distance.
Yeah.
This is like ninja magic ICBMs.
Yeah.
Which, that was
this
actually...
This is the tactical nuke of Naruto.
It was a pretty well done page when just Shikamaru and Ino crying. Or looking concerned.
Yeah.
Because...
And then the tiny explosion way off in the distance. And
like, even a little bit of dialogue from them probably would have killed that moment, or the scene.
Yeah. And then Madara's like, and with that, we've just kind of, you know, taken out their brain center, which is tying back to the beginning of the chapter, which is what they were trying to do by taking out the Ten Tails' brain by taking out them.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's... I'm guessing Shikamaru is going to step it up eventually.
Eventually,
do the same thing.
Well, I guess his main thing is he can't communicate to everybody, but...
Unless he uses Ino.
Can Ino do that?
I
thought that they had
not.
To have like that, like...
Can Ino do anything?
Well, no, I... I thought that that's what that one, like, head machine thing that that guy had on was about.
Yeah, but that's over a long distance. Maybe it's different in close distances.
Maybe because she's one of that genius generation that she'll be able to.
But seriously, what has she done, ever?
Cut her hair off.
Sakura did that too, though.
Yeah, well, no, but it was just the entire misdirection thing, so she was able to have the her control go through the ground. Do you remember that way back in the Chunin exam?
Vaguely?
No.
Yeah, but anyway, her main thing is that it was always a combined effort thing with the three of them, where one person's the misdirection, one person takes over the body... That sort
yeah,
of
but
stuff.
Shikamaru and Choji have gotten their own individual fights where they've managed to show off.
Yeah,
Shikamaru's gotten
not
several.
Really gotten that. No,
like she had that one fight against Sakura, and that was sort of it.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else that was just specifically her.
I mean, I know she was involved in the fight against what was his name, the guy with like the five hearts.
Yeah.
Killed. But I don't remember her doing anything. I remember Choji and Kakashi doing more in that fight. And they were barely involved.
Well, she took over the one guy for a bit, didn't she? The one without the hearts?
Maybe?
I don't know. That was a while ago. I would have to go back and look it up.
I think Shikamaru fought him.
You guys are really reminding me how I don't know a lot about Naruto.
Oh, did you not read through it?
I didn't read, I think, the stuff that was after the time skip. I don't know where I started.
Okay, there's basically everything post-time skip that doesn't involve Sasuke is good. And some of the stuff that does involve Sasuke is actually pretty good, too. But there's stretches where it's just mind-numbing, and it's not just him, it's the stuff when they're trying to find him that is the really bad stuff.
It's like 90% of the pain arc is great, and then the last 10% just sort of ruins the other... That's
it doesn't ruin it.
It sort of ruins it.
Fantastic ride.
It takes away a lot of... If you know nobody's going to die, then... All those deaths are meaningless.
Well, congratulations. You just ruined it for when he could go back and read it.
Oh, no.
No, I knew about... I read before that.
Yeah. Now,
that's what I'm afraid is going to happen here. Like, if there's suddenly a resurrection no jutsu that brings Shikamaru's dad back, that's going to be shitty.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually thinking about that. Like, oh, no, we're going to die. Well, it's okay. Nagato will bring us back, right?
Or Tsunade is crazy... resurrection powers at the cost of her own life or something. I don't know.
They've
done it before. I could see them doing it again.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. What was that?
I'm saying they've done it before. I could see them trying to do the resurrection thing again. And if they do, that would be shitty.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen this time, though.
It's the final arc.
Well, they haven't killed anyone young, so presumably they won't.
Yeah. But Emerson, if you get a chance, it's definitely worth going back. There's an arc where two of the Akatsuki are sent to capture Naruto, and they this is the conflict that we had been talking about, and the teacher of Choji, Ino, and Shikamaru is killed, and then basically they go out to try and take revenge, and Kakashi's involved in the fight and whatnot. And that's when Naruto first gets his sage powers. Or no, he does. It's right before he. It's when he first gets the
Rasen
using
Tree.
Elemental powers with the Rasengan.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That is just start to finish a fun sequence. It's one of the better things in the post time scale.
Though the thing I didn't like about that is that Naruto saves the day, even though it really should have been somebody from Asuma's team.
Well, no, Shikamaru takes out the one guy who is genuinely immortal.
He takes out Hidan, but yeah. I mean, those are two guys that killed Asuma, and really, Naruto just coming in and solving the whole problem kind of, like, if Kakashi's,
no.
if,
no, no,
if somebody
killed
Kakashi.
Naruto killed the one that didn't kill Asuma. Shikamaru killed
involved.
The one that killed Asuma.
He was there. They were fighting Asuma. He counts as an accomplice to the person who killed Asuma.
Actually, no. I'm trying to think back to that fight. Didn't he specifically stay out because the other guy told him to?
He's still part of the Akatsuki that killed Asuma.
He was present at the fight, but I think he didn't actually fight him himself.
I'm so lost.
The point is that it should have been Asuma's team. If somebody killed Kakashi, let's say Itachi killed Kakashi and Kisame was there, then would it be weird if, like, Neji beat Kisame? Or should it have been, like, Sakura or Naruto?
Yeah, it would have been a little weird.
See? That's the thing. And it would have been a good time to actually use Ino for once. Although, at this point, we can just safely say that Kishimoto cannot do female characters at all.
Yeah, I guess Tsunade is one of the few that's a strong female character in the series.
Yeah, and she's in half.
Yeah. And she's half the person she used to be.
On to One Piece.
No good transition from that.
Yeah. Nope.
So, first off, I would like to discuss this cover page, because I don't know what the hell is going on here.
It appears to be all the guys drinking milk.
Yes,
shirtless.
And Kuzan, who's with them just because...
And he has burn scars.
Yeah, which match the spoiler image that I discussed a week or two ago, so I guess that lends credence to that hypothetical spoiler.
Yes.
So if you want to not be spoiled, we won't talk about it more, but go back and listen to one of the previous weeks where we talk about it towards the end.
Why
who's the woman in the back who's holding up the hand that has, you know, pink wavy stuff coming out that seems to only be affecting the women and Chopper?
I'm guessing it's... She's the original character for Movie Z.
Yeah, maybe one of them, yeah. But I thought that I had seen the enemy designs from that. I don't know. Whatever. It's just a weird show.
Why are Nami cover. And Robin just freaking out?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it's something that other woman is doing, and Chopper's freaking out too for whatever reason.
Well, he's wearing a cow suit, I think.
And carrying milk.
And with milk around the his neck, like it's, you know, a chain, like he's a rapper or something like that.
I was thinking more like one of those rescue dogs that carry liquor.
That works too.
Alright, so the actual chapter begins with Luffy having punched Caesar Crown in the face.
Yes.
Or about to punch Caesar Crown in the face. And knocking him hells down a hallway. To the point where they can't see him anymore.
Yep, he goes flying.
And
with
then we get
Grizzly Magnum.
Then we get probably the most interesting part of the chapter to me, a better look at the people who've been watching.
I don't know if they're necessarily all the same people, but yeah.
I mean, we speculated before that one of those people was Lucci, and now we see Blano in the back.
Yeah, we see him, and then I actually think that the one in the lower right panel that says "Inform Jack about what transpired," his horns look kind of like the one person that's in Blackbeard's crew.
I can see that. The guy on the in the middle right panel, he looks so familiar, but I can't put my finger on it. The dude with the headphones?
Yeah, well, he's not Apu.
Yeah, because he's in the meeting with a Kid and all that.
Yeah, and Apu's the only person I can think of who has headphones. Then again, Kid was one of the ones the last time that was watching this stuff.
Yeah. But I imagine they're still watching, too.
Yeah, probably.
And who is Mask Guy? Because I feel like we've seen him before, too.
Oh, that's Killer. He's Kid's subordinate.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he is the other supernova who is not a captain.
So he's watching this and seeing Luffy take down Cedar Crown.
Yeah, and not Stroking necessarily, like, this is completely disjoint from the it might be tied to Blackbeard, but the inform Jack about what transpired, somebody was making a comment that with the fact that Doflamingo is named Joker, it could be that the underworld has a deck of cards theme.
I can see that.
Yeah. So
Oda would not be beyond that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of like how there was, you know, the Mr. number and then females were all holidays of some sort, you know, building up to their importance. I could easily see the core group that they would end up fighting would all be deck of card named people.
He does like theme categorization.
Yeah.
But yeah, so everyone sees Luffy defeat Teacher Crown, and so the rest of it is people running towards that central chamber.
Lots of running still. Lots and lots of running this arc.
No, apparently it's coming to a head.
Yeah.
And Brook appears with Kinemon, or has the
you know, encased by the gas.
Gas poison, yeah.
Which I think underscores the fact we will be seeing a cure to this before too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
there's no way that they're taking him out.
He thought that the dragon that he cut up earlier was Momonosuke.
Yeah.
So he rushed back into the gas and immediately got frozen.
Yeah.
I like how Usopp...
explain how, you know, Brook was able to get him out of there.
Well, Brook doesn't breathe.
But, huh?
Brook doesn't breathe.
Yes, he does. He poops. He does everything.
He doesn't breathe, though. Remember when they got they put everyone to sleep on the ship and kidnapped them?
Brook, I thought it was just that he was already asleep or something like that. But yeah, no. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
I don't think gas works on him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Which would come up more in this arc, but whatever.
Well, he's been running towards the end. It just he's been indisposed the entire time.
Yeah.
I do
and
like
then we
the panel
to
of
see, Usopp take out a bunch of mooks.
Yeah.
And
he defeated them all himself.
Yeah, and he has his new Kabuto where have we seen it before where the pouch is a plant?
I don't think we've seen him use it before now.
Yeah. I like the fact that the pouch for his slingshot is now a plant that's kind of like a, you know, snapper. Almost looks like a Mario.
Piranha plant.
Yeah.
So yeah, Nami's group comes and meets Luffy. And Momonosuke discovers that Luffy was not kidding about his crew saving all the children.
Yeah.
He's just reacting to everything. He's not even saying anything. It's like, oh, ha! Ah.
And Law comes in, it's like, where the hell is Cedar Crown? Luffy's like, I don't know.
He
was
shows up with a truck so that they're actually able to move through the gas or whatever, or get everybody out down the pipe. So, Law actually effective this chapter. He did not make a bad decision. He brought a truck.
I like how he just keeps questioning Luffy about it. He's like, I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah. Oh, he's somewhere down that way. I wonder how far he went.
Once Luffy punches him, then that's the end of it for him.
Yep. He has punched him.
It's over.
Yeah. And then we get to what is my favorite part of the chapter.
Baby Five?
Yes.
Okay.
I think she's a hilarious character.
Clear this up for me real quick. Was she the one that was trying to assassinate Joker earlier?
Yes. She was attacking Joker because because Doflamingo killed her fiancé.
But she works for him?
Yes.
Okay. So she is the combat maid with the boogie boogie fruit.
Yes, which is the all weapon fruit or something like that.
Which is great when you get to the end of the chapter because it suddenly makes a whole lot of sense. But she's basically just laying down character motivations as she flies over to Vegapunk Island. Or not Vegapunk, yes. Punk Hazard.
Where she apparently, you know, cannot refuse anybody's request and whatnot, no matter what sort of person they are, when she is needed for something, which I'm just waiting for her to meet Sanji.
She's wonderfully naive.
Yes.
I like that her tears are filling up in her goggles.
I like that she has a cigarette, too.
Yeah.
She is the perfect girl for Sanji.
She and Sanji were totally made for one another.
Because
he is a gentleman, so he would never ask anything of her.
I don't know how I feel about this kind of extension of who she is. Because when she came in and blasting guns a tote, and then like the last panel we saw of her was Doflamingo making her like shoot herself, it set a very dark tone. But now she's here, yeah. Fine.
That was just comical.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I can understand. It's One Piece and it's Oda, and that's the sort of thing he likes to do. I don't think he'll ever go full grimdark like that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that he'll ever go whole hog in that direction.
Like, Ace was one thing. Doflamingo shooting a maid is a totally different thing.
But I felt like it really said something about Doflamingo, but now it's kind of lessened.
Yeah.
But not that we need, you know, more things to tell us Doflamingo is an evil person.
I understand where you're coming from, and I kind of agree. It's probably a lesson for me because I like Baby Five as a character. So I think I'd rather have the character than I would the thing it says about Doflamingo.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because she's kind of hilarious. Yeah, so they instruct her to pick up Caesar Crown.
Yeah, because they see Caesar Crown and Joker starts smiling again. I liked how it showed that.
Because mm-hmm. Now that he had, if he can get Caesar Crown back, that means he can make more sad.
Yes, which is all that he cares about. And then we get to see Franky in the Battle Franky 38.
Yes.
Which is you know, he has been out of the picture for a while, so.
I guess this is what he went to go get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. And then with all the gas and everything outside, probably was just stuck out there. But he's apparently right near where Caesar is, so he's going to get to have a bit of a fight against these two.
Which honestly sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Like, just thinking about it makes me laugh.
What's this, some kind of bird?
Now,
a weapon woman
think,
fighting a cyborg.
Yeah, I think he is going to beat them, but I think they're still going to escape with Caesar.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Well, if Law gets Caesar Crown now, then he has no real reason to continue traveling, or not traveling with Luffy, but continuing on this path.
Well,
the
I mean,
sense of urgency
they're
is
in an alliance with
yeah.
One.
If they get Caesar Crown back, they're not going to go after Doflamingo. Immediately.
It kills the urgency a little bit.
Yeah.
So I can see them taking Caesar Crown out of there. Or Franky accidentally blasting him away.
That would be funny too.
But yeah, this is a good chapter. I laughed a lot. And
it
good
had
plot
some hell yeah moments.
Yeah.
I laughed at Kinemon just getting gassed.
When he was like just
off panel.
Feet away from his kid. Oh well. I still think Kinemon makes sense as a crew member.
Nah.
Still, people disagree with that. So uh-huh. people suggesting Baby Five as a crew member.
Yes.
Which I would be okay with.
For the 13th or 14th crew member, because obviously she's going to get married to Sanji, right?
Yes. I think a hilarious thing would be if Sanji fell in love with her and she fell in love with Sanji. But then she finds that being not needed by Zoro is more attractive.
oh no.
Oh no. I am really hoping that happens now. That concept had not occurred to me.
I like how Doflamingo has just like a table full of Denden Mushi.
He's a busy guy.
Of course, he has to stay in communication with everybody, right?
Well, he's just sitting in front of it, depressed. Yeah. Good chapter, and I like where this is going. Thoughts or predictions for next week?
Like I said, I think that Frankie will have a fight, but they're going to get away with Caesar Crown.
Law's going to show up probably at the end.
Yeah.
At the end of the fight, you mean?
At the end of next chapter.
Oh, yeah.
It does make you wonder how they're going to get those kids home. I assume Law's going to take them.
Well, I mean, they're on a tank. Frankie is on a tanker, so I'm going to guess that's the boat that they're going to use. And I don't know if it's Law. I really think that what's going to end up happening is that Kinemon is going to be the person who's returning them.
Or Smoker. Because that would be give him a reason to not go after Doflamingo immediately.
True. There's that, mm-hmm. too.
I could see that. Or, Smoker will want to go after Doflamingo, but then Tashigi will be like, no, we have to take care of the kids.
Yeah.
Because she is his conscience.
Yeah.
She tries.
So, now that Caesar Crown is disposed of, where would you rank him among One Piece villains?
Above Spandam?
Really?
Well, just in terms of, I think he is a more competent villain than Spandam.
I don't know, I think Spandam is, not even really the villain of that arc. I think it's totally Lucci.
Well, I think Lucci is, the rival of that arc, but I think that Spandam is the primary villain.
He's petty and he's angry, and it looks like he's more the jester of that arc than he is the actual main villain.
But it was the catharsis of defeating him when Robin was able to unleash on him. That was the catharsis of that arc.
He was so crappy to Robin that... And he was the one who put in the Buster call, so...
Yeah. So I'd say above Hody, above him.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Definitely below NL and Crocodile and those sort of guys.
I think Crocodile's pretty much at the top to me.
Yeah, probably for me too. And then Lucci as well was. I mean, Lucci as a character was not that interesting, but for the fighting it was. But as the antagonist,
I'd put Crown just below Moria.
I'd put him just above.
I feel like Moria had more character motivation and character development. Crown was just evil. That's it. That's not a bad thing in a villain, but there's nothing to stand out, really, about him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if Moria hadn't existed, then Crown would have played better.
Yeah. Essentially, a lot of the things about Crown were Moria redux.
Yeah. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but, you know.
Yeah. All right, then. Final thoughts?
It was a good week.
I hope Baby 5 is a consistent character.
Yeah, I hope she continues being as great as she was this week.
Yeah, very entertaining.
Yeah. So, anyway, next week is a double chapter. I'm not sure when we're supposed to be getting it.
I'm not sure when we're supposed to be recording a new Jumpcast.
Well, yeah.
We're going to do the manga of the year thing soon?
Yeah.
All right. This has been your Thursday, December 13th Jumpcast. Guys, thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see you all next week.
Junjo Karen na Oritachi da, a pretty boy volleyball player named Akira, gets kicked out of his middle school team for being too arrogant.
You lost me at boy.
Yeah, with his coach refusing to give him a reference, it looks like he will only be able to go to a high school with a mediocre volleyball team. By chance, he finds a leaflet for Serio High School volleyball team and decides to try out, but then complications arrive in the form of a delinquent with very curly hair.